I'm Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Just 3 weeks after the nation saw the footage of Tyree Nichols' violent arrest, the five former Memphis police officers involved appear in court and plead not guilty. Nichols' mother and stepfather were also in the courtroom. CBS's Bradley Blackburn reports.
The family of Tyree Nichols addressed the media moments after the five former Memphis police officers accused of killing him made their first court appearance.
We have to start this process of justice right now, and I want each and every one of those police officers to be able to look me in the face.
The officers looked straight ahead as they pleaded not guilty to second-degree murder and other charges.
Six people have been killed in shootings at three locations in Arca, Butler, Mississippi. Police say a 52-year-old suspect is in custody, charged with first-degree murder, and will face additional charges. Among the dead, the suspect's ex-wife and his stepfather. Resident Patsy Franks Hensley tells News Nation,
"It is such a tragedy. We have a good... Most people are just really good, and we never would have thought anything like that would have happened here."
One man was shot at a store, and five others were shot at homes in the small northwestern Mississippi town. A counterterrorism raid in northeast Syria leaves four U.S. service members injured. Three of the four had wounds serious enough that they needed to be evacuated to a military hospital in Germany. The U.S. military operation took out senior ISIS leader Hamza al-Hamzi, who supplied suicide vests to other operatives. CBS's David Martin.
U.S. Special Operations Forces went in by helicopter and surrounded a nondescript house in northeastern Syria. But as they closed in on their target, an explosion, either a suicide vest or a hand grenade, went off.
It's an east-west doubleheader for SpaceX, CBS's Peter King explains.
Started with this launch from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California.
Engines full power and liftoff.
That Falcon 9 carried dozens of Starlink internet satellites into orbit. If all goes as planned, launch number two comes later tonight as the company launches another Falcon 9, this one from Cape Canaveral, carrying a British communications satellite. The first SpaceX human flight of the year is expected to take four astronauts to the International Space Station a week from Sunday. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
A jury tonight could not make a decision in the double murder trial of former Pentagon police officer David Dixon. A mistrial has been declared. WTOP's Kyle Cooper.
Dixon, who was off duty, says he was acting in self-defense when he fired into a car leaving his apartment complex. Killed were Dominique Williams and James Johnson. The two were suspected of breaking into cars. David Haynes is an attorney for the Johnson family.
This has all been very difficult to relive. But at the same time, the family is very determined that they see justice.
Kyle Cooper for CBS News, Washington.
This is
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Milwaukee's population went up by 800 after an appeal of its 2020 census results. Milwaukee's official population stands at a little more than 577,000. That's down about 3% from the 2010 headcount. Milwaukee leaders are also appealing what they say is an undercount in minority neighborhoods. Air National Guard leaders say they're proud Wisconsin-based jets shot down a UFO over Lake Huron Sunday.
And I think the nation's awareness of our capabilities and our relevance has only gone up.
That's Brigadier General David May in an exclusive interview with Civic Media's Todd Albaugh. In sports, the Bucks beat Chicago last night 112-100. Milwaukee's 12-game winning streak is the longest in the NBA this season. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Wisconsin's spring primary election is Tuesday, February 21st, and your local Civic Media radio station will be tracking the results.
Special live coverage starts at 7 p.m., and News Director Terry Bell, with a team of political experts, will be following which candidates, both local and in the state Supreme Court race, move on to April.
Spring primary election coverage live, Tuesday, February 21st, starting at 7, here on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
Monday morning at 8. Don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
The Devil's Advocates.
Hey, Jenny.
It's up to all of us. It's not just up to Democrats. Are we ready to rid our country of this perversion and deception? You know, are we sick of massacres at churches, grocery stores, theaters, concerts? Are we sick of adults forcing children who are raped into pregnancy? When is enough enough that we're going to vote all those fascists?
I'm putting you down for Caller Hall of Fame today. We have to carry these messages, even if the Democratic Party is incapable. You keep it up, sister.
Follow The Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com. WAUK 540 AM. New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK Radio.
Download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'm looking at what's going on in East Palestine, Ohio. And again, this derailment is something that, you know, we've talked about safety on the railroads for months now. We've been talking to people who work on the rails. We've been talking about the contract fight that was. And look, this isn't just the rails. This is virtually every industry. And the amount of money that they spend on lobbying, on getting rules that they want. I look at the fact that the Association of American Railroads spent in 2018 $4,737,989. Norfolk Southern themselves spent over $1 million lobbying against Obama-era regulations that would have done something on safety on brakes. And what happened? Trump reversed all of it. And again, corporate America, with their power and their lobbyists, they get what they want. And sadly, we're the ones who end up cleaning up the mess. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on in East Palestine, Ohio, on the ground, I've asked our good friend Jared Cassidy to come talk with us. Jared is the Assistant National Legislative Director with the Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transport Union, the SMART Union, smart-union.org, their website. Jared, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
So, you know, I'm looking at this, and again, I go back to this lobbying numbers. I go back to the amount of money that this industry spends on making sure that nobody's really looking over their shoulder, and the amount of money that they just pour into stuff other than safety, other than wages, hours, conditions for their workforce, into new equipment. It's mind-blowing, the waste, fraud, and abuse, if you will, of the resources that they have.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's amazing how much money they will spend to protect from spending money on the things they should be spending money on. And instead of, you know, using their dollars and their profit to make sure that the railroad is safer for the men and women that I represent and for the people of East Palestine and for the men and women in all the communities that interact with the railroad. I mean, there's very little in this country that the railroad doesn't touch. And the fact that they spend the amount of money they do to make sure that they have the freedoms, if you will, that they get to enjoy away from regulation and from oversight that most other industries are not able to do. I mean, it is absolutely terrifying. And we're literally seeing it play out right now in a small town in Ohio with 1,500 residents questioning whether their very home that they've lived in for who knows how long is even safe to inhabit.
Yeah, I mean, this is the scary part of this. But, you know, the reality is in 2022, Norfolk Southern profited, what was it, like $4.8 billion? And a lot of that, I'm not sure the exact number, I'm sure you would know, they spent on stock buybacks. So, you know, the fact that you've had three people on this train that was, what, 9,300 feet plus long, they're making billions of dollars, and what do they choose to do with it? Buy their stock back instead of having a fourth or a fifth or a sixth person on that train, so that, you know, maybe this doesn't happen. You know, who knows what? But it seems to me wasted resources that could be better spent.
Yeah, I mean, the system is rigged, and it's I don't know how else to say it. I mean, here you have this derailment that has done all the damage that it's done. We're looking at millions of dollars of retribution or to spend to make the scene right, to hopefully make whole the folks that were displaced or you know, financially harmed in this. But at the end of the day, when you do the numbers, it looks like 1.5% to 1.7% of the total profit that Norfolk Southern is going to have this year is going to be used in East Palestine. And to put that into perspective, it's already been projected that Norfolk Southern will fully financially recover from this accident by May. So they have displaced an entire village. They have polluted the airways. They have polluted the waterways, the soil in the rail bed that they have already laid. They've already put new tracks down. They're already running trains over. You cannot tell me that dirt, that environment is clean and properly vetted or protected against whatever chemicals may still be in there. I mean, the priority, as always, in the railroad industry is to get the track laid, to get the trains moving. They literally just kind of push the equipment to the side so that you can go through there. And that is priority number one. And then financially speaking, their number one goal, and it's been this way for years now, is the stock buybacks, is to make sure that Wall Street's protected and the hedge fund investors that have forced their way into this industry are recuperating or recovering the money that they demand that the railroads produce. And that is goal number one. They will tell you it's safety. I am a railroader. I represent railroaders, and I will tell you with absolute assurance, safety is not number one. It is profit. It is getting trains moving. Everything else comes later.
Look, as someone who spent my entire career in the trucking industry, it's the same thing. They preach safety, practice something completely different. But fortunately, at least in the trucking industry, and as someone who has a union card, I've always felt empowered to say, you know what, this vehicle's not safe. I'm not moving it. I don't know that you can do that on the rails, especially when you're talking about a train. These two train derailments over the last couple of weeks, these things have been in excess of 9,300 feet. I don't know how three people, let alone wanting to have only one person, I don't know how you pre-trip that. I don't know how you know that all the couplings are right and everything. I have no idea how you go about caring for a 9,300 foot long vehicle.
It's not like it used to be. You know, once upon a time, when you get back into the history of railroading and we had the caboose, you had a lot more, you had a lot more say as a conductor into the integrity of the train or as to the overall safety or even the opinion of, do you feel like this train is safe to take? You know, 30, 40 years ago, a conductor or an engineer would be able to say, I'm not comfortable with this. We need to switch it out. We need to make changes. That doesn't occur today. It's always someone else mysteriously that has pre-inspected it for you. And in an era of Carmen being eliminated from the railroad industry, it's mind-boggling the way in which our trains are always ready for us. I mean, you know, we have what's called an airslip that tells us it's been inspected and we're instructed to go. You know, if you look at the two trains, the train in East Palestine, the train just outside of Detroit that just derailed, both on Norfolk Southern, they're roughly 9,300 feet. I cannot speak to specifics in East Palestine, but I can tell you looking at Detroit that when you have these longer trains, generally speaking, the way the trains are made up are very concerning. It's extremely hard to build a train the way that makes physical sense. So if I'm an engineer, I want all my loads towards a locomotive, and then I want all of my empties on the rear end of the train.
Sure.
And if you think about it like a slinky, when you put the brakes on, you want the least amount of weight coming in on the heavy end. But on these longer trains, what we're seeing is it's not convenient for the railroad to build them ideally in a way that's ideal for the engineer to operate. And so all of this weight on the rear end, when you put on the brakes or when something goes wrong, it comes crashing in. And then the longer the train you have, and this is just simple physics. I mean, hopefully everyone understands this. The longer the train you have, the more weight you're going to have. And when an emergency brake application happens, which means something has gone wrong in the train or it's separated, if you have more weight on the rear end and a car, let's say the 20th car comes off the ground, all of that weight just comes piling in and it exacerbates the derailment in such a way that it makes things worse when it comes to how things fall out, if you will. I mean, you're looking at tank cars that are being breached, and theoretically they really shouldn't be breached. So you know there are extreme forces at play, and inertia is what it is. And if you're moving something that's 20, 30, 40 million plus pounds, and 10, 15 million of it's behind this one car that has hit the ground and immediately gone from 40 miles an hour to a dead stop, that extra length is so much more dangerous in that instantaneous moment. And so that's why you hear us talking about train length. And we can go forever here, where I'm a locomotive engineer, just moving a train that's that size or even longer, it's difficult. You know, the old saying, you run by the seat of your pants,
right?
That could not be more true in the railroad industry. You literally run by the seat of your pants. Everything is feel. You're trying to feel if the train is stretched out like the slinky, or if it's brought in. And if it's longer, this piece is stretched out, this piece is bunched up, this piece is stretched out. And you're just hoping the equipment that was built a long time ago and is not designed to haul all of this weight, you're just hoping it holds together. But in the instant it goes wrong, man, does it go wrong. And nothing has changed since East Palestine in the way that the operating practices are going. And in 2 weeks' time, I would like to think that the FRA and that the railroad themselves have had enough time to analyze this to say, hey, this is a problem. We can see this. We've had two wrecks in less than a week's time. We need to make these changes, but we haven't seen that. What we have seen is a railroad that is doing everything in its power to cover up or to correct a situation where they had this major derailment. They just want it to go away. That's all they want it to do, is go away. And why do they want it to go away? Because time is their friend. As soon as they have that break, the faster they're able to have people forget about it, with exception to East Palestine, but everybody else, as soon as it's gone from the media, operations go back to the way they are. And we cannot allow that in the railroad industry. And that's why I'm so very thankful that you're still talking about this subject.
No, we just had on Representative Chris DeLuzio, and I asked him that very question. You know, once this is out of the media, off the front pages, does this just get swept under the rug and go back to business as usual? And he seemed optimistic that this wouldn't. I'm not quite that optimistic, because I know, you know, the Republican Party right now, and you don't have to come here with me, but I know right now the Republican Party, all up in arms, you know, attacking the Biden administration, is attempting to change the narrative away from this is the responsibility of this rail company, this is the responsibility of deregulation, to, well, it's Joe Biden's fault. They're working overtime to change the narrative. And sadly, I've had a lot of people reach out to me, not even talking about the railroad anymore. They're just talking about the cleanup. And I think we have to focus on why the cleanup is happening, who's responsible for the cleanup, and so that we make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the fact is that we had something go wrong in a train, and it should not be acceptable in the United States of America to say, hey, we had a failure, whether it's a mechanical failure or a power failure, whatever the failure may be. It should not be okay for us to say, well, we had this failure, we can just move on and we can accept the next one that comes along with it too. You know, I was talking to someone today, and this thought came to my mind. If you're boarding an airplane, and literally as you're walking through the door to get into this airplane, the pilot comes out of the cockpit, turns to you, looks you in the eye and says, this plane is not safe to fly, but the carrier is absolutely going to make me take you all anyway. Do you still get on that airplane?
Not a chance.
No. And this is what we're telling you as the railroad employees, and not just you. I mean, we're telling everybody. We run these trains. We are the pilots of these trains. They are not safe. And you don't have the opportunity or the decision to climb on our train, but instead you're forced to accept us coming through your community with, I mean, ungodly amounts of commodities. I mean, the volume of what we haul is terrifying. And when you look at all that stuff and you see what precision scheduled railroading has done to this industry and the way it's reduced manpower, the way it's reduced inspections, it is not a safe environment. And we are absolutely screaming in the bullhorn here that if East Palestine is not the wake-up call, what in God's name is it going to take for us to have a wake-up call in the railroad industry? Because East Palestine is a smaller area. Is the next one going to be Chicago? Is it going to be New York City? Is it going to be my hometown of Nashville, Tennessee? This is not sustainable. We cannot allow it to continue. We have got to have more oversight. We have got to have more regulation. And we have got to have more legislation. And I'm telling you, too, we have got to let the employees speak, and people need to listen to them on what's going on, because they are looking out for everyone else, including themselves. And we have something to say. We have something to add here. And our input has value. And there's no one better suited for us to fix it. The railroads created this problem. It is an asinine thought to think they're the ones to fix it when the ship is sinking and they're the ones throwing water into the ship, helping it sink. They're not going to be the ones to right the ship. That's us. We know how to do that. And so, again, I mean, it's the conversation continues.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Jared Cassidy. Jared's the Assistant National Legislative Director for the Smart Union Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transport Union, smart-union.org, their website. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. Now, you know, you were talking about the length of the trains, and I saw a Government Accountability Office report that said that between 2008 and 2019, the lengths of trains have increased by 25%, which, you know, would bear out to what you've been saying. From 2019 to 2023, because of the pandemic, because of the supply chain shortage, has that number grown even larger? Will we see another report that it's grown another 25%?
Yes, absolutely. And the railroads have even doubled down within the last, I want to say, 6 to 8 months and said that the trains are even going to continue to grow longer. Rick, we have trains that have been operated in America that are in excess of 5 miles long. If 5 miles long is not too long, then I ask the question, what is? If we don't put a number on it, there is no limit to how far this goes. And the reason that we're seeing this occur is in the pursuit of that holy grail of profit. You cannot keep extending these trains in the way that they are. Number one, the infrastructure is not built for it. It congests the system. It causes a whole lot of heartache for the people that live in the communities where there are crossings, because it is impossible for a railroad crew not to stop and block a crossing. And it creates a whole lot of stoppage or congestion to the interstate commerce. And because I just said commerce, I want to tell you the railroads use the Commerce Clause in the United States Constitution and the Commerce Clause within the Interstate Commerce Commission Termination Act as a get out of jail free card. And that cannot happen anymore either. The Commerce Clause in the Constitution doesn't belong to the railroads. It belongs to the citizens of the United States of America. And what it says is that goods in this nation should have a free path to get to market. But these long trains are congesting the system. You cannot move freight on a system that is not able to allow fluidity when it goes through. If I'm in this gigantic train and I stop and I've got the main line blocked and I've got the siding blocked, not only have I stopped myself, I've stopped every other train along the system that goes along with it. And it shuts down everything. The other piece to this is you cannot deliver freight safely or effectively to customers with these gigantic trains. They, in and of themselves, are actually violating the Commerce Clause by doing what they're doing. But what they do is they walk into these state capitals and these hearing rooms on the Hill, and I'm on the Hill, I witness it, and they use the Commerce Clause as if, we're the railroads. We can do whatever we want because we own this piece of commerce. And that is not true. And it's time that we start taking that back too. But
let me ask you this then, since you brought this up. because I've got a lot of listeners who've reached out and said it's time for us to either use the Federal Trade Commission to break them up because they're monopolies, they're too big. And I've had a lot of people even say that, you know, maybe it's time to nationalize these. Any response to either of those ideas?
So breaking them up, I don't know a whole lot about it. I would be curious to hear more. As for nationalizing, Rick, if I had more faith in the government, I would say sure. But, you know, knowing how dysfunctional Washington, D.C. is at this point and the way that the parties work or don't work together, depending on how you want to look at it, that gives me a lot of pause in trying to say that. Right now, what I think we need, in my personal opinion, is that we need someone to own this, first of all, that actually in the government to own it. And then to start actually putting forth legislation and regulation and holding true to the oversight piece of the railroads. And I am a wholehearted believer in allowing a reporting system that the employees can actually report what's occurring to them, one, on safety conditions, and two, on service issues. If we have the ability to say, hey, my train broke in two today and it shouldn't have broken two today, I want to let you know. Or if I got one axle off or two axles off on the ground, I'm going to report that to the FRA so that they can make sure the railroads are reporting in the way that's necessary. Why is that important? Because right now, the way things stand in this country, and even with the FRA and the way they regulate the industry, they don't police the industry. Everything that they get comes from the railroads. Even when they regulate and they look at equipment standards, you know who provides the equipment standards so that the FRA knows how to hold the railroads accountable? They literally depend on the railroads to provide them with the standards so that they know how to enforce the standards. The system is not built for public safety. It is built for the railroads to just do what they've been doing ever since their inception, and that is railroad the people of the United States of America. East Palestine is being railroaded right now. My members are being railroaded right now. And so, you know, is there merit into looking at, you know, breaking up the monopolies? Is there merit into looking at nationalization of the railroad? There could be, but I don't think that we have a government in place that can get anything done. My fear is it may actually get worse because I haven't seen them work together since I've been here.
Yeah. No, I mean, if there's anything that they should be working together on, it should be this. But the breakup, you know, comes to me with people saying, you know, back in the 80s, there were, what, 30, 40 different railroads back then? You would know. I'm not sure. But, you know, all of this deregulation, all of this consolidation has happened 1980s forward. The idea is to go back to having, you know, much, much smaller companies being, you know, more nimble to be able to move stuff faster and maybe not have these big, gigantic trains. Any value in that?
There could be. I mean, there's competition and, you know, I don't know how you break them up and give them to smaller entities at this point. But I mean, there very well could be, Rick. I mean, really, I'm just spitballing here with you at this point. You know, I don't know. And I don't even know how we get back to that.
Well, because here's the thing. This ain't working.
No, I haven't, no
the
it's not working.
The outweighed power that these companies have, just not working. Last question I've got for you. One of the Republican congressmen threw out that, you know, Biden's infrastructure plan didn't fix the rails and kind of threw out this idea that because Biden and the infrastructure money didn't do something on the rails, this happened. Any reality in that? Who takes care of the tracks?
No, there's no reality in that. This is a private industry. The railroad companies take care of their own tracks. The last thing that would have ever come out of there is a whole lot more money coming at the railroads. I mean, when you look at the profit margins these railroads have, and they literally brag every single day in the media and on the Hill about how much money they put into their own industries. The infrastructure package had nothing to do with that.
Okay.
If we really want to start pointing fingers, we need to look back to the last administration, because what happened under the last administration was detrimental to the railroad industry going forward. You can look at the Federal Railroad Administration. Under the Trump White House, what happened in the FRA, they decided to completely gut the Office of Safety and reorganize it in a way that doesn't look like any other agency under the DOT umbrella. But what it did do was create points of contact in liaisons, singular points of contact liaisons between the FRA and the carrier that meet on weekly or biweekly basis to make sure that the railroads are able to present to FRA what their goals are going to be for the coming future and how the FRA can help them get to where they want to go. And you know who's left out? We are.
The workers. Nope. And this is where over the summer you guys were sounding the warning. Nobody listened. But Jared, I appreciate.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. The five former Memphis police officers facing charges including second-degree murder and the death of Tyree Nichols makes their first court appearance and enter
a plea of not guilty.
In Arkabutla, Mississippi, several people are shot to death at three locations. WREG-TV's Jordan James.
The suspect was captured following a brief pursuit. Moments later, deputies also discovered two more people who were killed. So in total, six people died.
Including the suspect's ex-wife and stepfather. This is the second day in a row that flights out of International Terminal 1 at JFK Airport in New York City were disrupted because of a power outage. Some frustrated passengers.
We had our vacation planned, and we have hotels that are booked, and they're not giving us our money back.
This is the busiest city in the world. How do they not have a backup plan for this?
The airport tweets that contingent on the completion of repairs and testing, they anticipate the start of limited operations tomorrow, but recommend travelers check with their airlines before heading to Terminal 1. CBS News. Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. The workforce shortage is a growing problem across the country. Here in Wisconsin, the shortage is compounded by the difficulty of attracting and retaining younger workers. The state's seen 106,000 people under the age of 26 leave over the last decade. If that trend continues, the working age population in Wisconsin could shrink by about 130,000 people in the next 7 years. The lack of affordable childcare and housing contributes to the problem of attracting a younger worker. The Packers Fan Hall of Fame has a new member. John Bresky of Eldoran inducted into the Hall of Fame yesterday as their 25th member. He's a decorated U.S. Marine veteran and served in the Korean War. Bresky attended his first Packer game at Lambeau Field in 1958. I'm Jane Van Mayer. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
My fine guest, Maggie Dawn, attorney at law. I thought that the laws of the United States were supposed to evolve with societal norms. The vast majority of Americans, 70% approximately, believe that Roe v. Wade should be the law of the land. So that seems exactly contrary to the way the courts are supposed to evolve with our nation.
I'll just say this. The guy in Colorado can't be forced to make a gay wedding cake, but I can be forced to make a baby. I don't know about you, but that makes no damn sense to me.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Example of loving, creative people going the other way. Happy Valentine's Day.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I got to tell you, in talking with Jared Cassidy from the Smart Union, one of the things that I didn't ask him, and we're going to get the answer to next week, how old were those rail cars? You know, and how many of them had to be breached? You know, there were five of them that had the vinyl chloride on it. You know, how many of them had to be blown up to get to them? Was all five? Was that a bit excessive? And the age of those cars. Now, understand, you know, the rail industry, enormous amounts of stock buybacks. You know, couldn't they have used? And this is what I've been talking about for a long time. They're saying we've got no productive use for this money. We're just going to put it in our pockets. Couldn't they have bought maybe some new cars? Maybe ones that wouldn't have malfunctions. Just kind of a thought. But we will get some answers next week on that. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, my good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So, you know, you're an Ohio guy. Ohio's doing some fun stuff. Evidently, we're going to be cutting state income and property taxes and cutting education by $1.2 billion. You know, because we need to help. We need to help make sure that that property owners in the well-to-do get well better off.
I mean, technically, and people know this who live in Ohio, it's a pretty low tax state as it stands.
Yeah, I'm like, how are you going to cut more taxes from that? And but I know how. They're going to take it from education. And sadly, what we've been seeing across the country is this move to undoing child labor laws. So we won't educate them, pipeline right into crummy low-wage jobs, America's future.
Well, I mean, it's going to be tough. They have to balance, you know, their budget. It's going to have to go through a process. But this all will happen by around July the 1st, whatever they do. Of course, I can't imagine how they're not going to get the education community up in arms.
Yeah, I saw that the first bill Republicans in your state put up was more tax cuts, and I'm just scratching my head, going, "That's your biggest problem? Not that little thing up in East Palestine? Now you've got family somewhere in that neighborhood, don't you?"
Oh, I own a house there. Both my children, all my grandchildren, we're all there. Everybody. And I'm 74 miles, as the crow flies, 52, but we're in that big circle of the 100. And we're 30 miles down from Steubenville, where the water, you know, was contaminated. Now, the local St. Clairsville water system says, well, you know, their water comes, I don't know, from a different source, but I don't know about the riverfront cities. And plus, as you know, Rick, there's not been enough transparency on this all the way around, period,
no.
Period.
No, none of this stuff ever gets the kind of transparency we should. And this is what has happened in all of these things. So am I surprised by it? No. Is this Biden's fault? I don't think it's his fault. I wish he would have taken a more active role. I wish Pete Buttigieg would have said more. But ultimately, this is a state's issue. You know, why wasn't DeWine screaming for the state? They only just yesterday asked for FEMA resources.
Right. There was a debate about that of why they didn't. And then I looked into the, you know, at first they said, well, you know, Trump did this rule. And I looked into that. And from what I saw, the rule was, as they said in the article, hollowed by the Obama administration, further hollowed by the Trump administration. Then nobody afterwards said, well, maybe we should put that rule back about this, you know, device that would have seen that the bearing was on fire, you know?
Now, if I remember right, you know, during the Obama years, they tried to put more regulation in place for a different braking system. Because if you remember, you know, out west, we were having bomb trains all over the place.
Out west?
Yeah. Remember, you know, up like North Dakota, the oil car tankers were derailing, and they were calling them bomb trains.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes.
And if you remember right, you know, the Obama era, they pushed for some regulations to change the braking system, of which the industry, you know, pushed heavily against. And Trump, when he came into office, wiped them all out. So the question is, you know, could that have solved, could have stopped this? I don't know. I'm not going to say yes or no, but I do know that deregulation, not helpful.
Well, correct. I mean, rarely is it ever helpful anyway. I think we kind of know that.
Have we learned that, though? I mean, look, I mean, you were a Republican congressman. Part of all of this stuff started during the Reagan era forward. There were people, you know, my Republican friends were the ones saying, you know, job killing regulations, Bob.
Well, and then it went from, you know, the deregulation to the trying to privatize the entire country, period, too, up and down. So I think hopefully we've learned our lesson. But I don't know.
Yeah. Now, I guess the other question that I didn't ask is, how is your family doing? Were you in the evacuation zone? I mean, are they safe? Are they okay?
Oh, yeah, they weren't in the evacuation zone. Now, but they were in the circle like everybody else, you know, 5 million people in that whole basin there with the water supply. But also they're in the circle where you had to watch. And my daughter sent me something which was so weird. It said, well, don't worry, the wind went northeast instead of south or southeast, which I thought, okay, don't everybody worry down the Ohio Valley, but gee, if you were northeast, maybe you should have worried. When you see stuff like this, you just say, you got to be kidding me. And then, of course, the railroad offered, they said $5 each, but that it was $1,000 each. But that's not the point to offer them $1,000 each. They wouldn't show up because they were afraid of the, quote, violence of the employee, you know, towards the employees. And, you know, Norfolk and Southern will hide their heads on this. And throwing $1,000 out there is not going to be anything of value, because what about going back there? 3,500 fish died. 3,500. What about the saturation in the soil? Who's going to buy, you know, if anybody has to leave, tell me, would you buy a house in East Palestine?
Nope.
I wouldn't.
Nope. And that's, that whole area is going to be under a cloud for decades.
Right, exactly. So, you know, my daughter took precautions. They said to not drink the water, to boil it. And she, like everybody else, are doing that. Then, of course, you know, bottled water is flying off the shelves. You know, so everybody's trying to see what they can do to get bottled water. But I think the real problem is just they need to have, you know, constant, transparent information. There ought to be a website where it says the water supply in Blair, Ohio, and Shadyside, Ohio, down Marietta, Ohio, and down to Kentucky. You know, these are the tests. These are when we did them. This is the outcome.
So who should be responsible for that? Where does that come from? Do you trust the industry to do it?
No question.
Do you trust Norfolk Southern? Or is it Ohio's and Pennsylvania's responsibility? Is it the federal government? You know, who do we lay that at the feet of?
The transparency and science issue right now, it should be the under the responsibility of the Fed and the states, period. You know, the scientists. I mean, I don't want Norfolk and Southern telling me what they found or didn't find.
Because they're never going to find anything.
Yeah. So I want the state and the Fed to do that. But the responsibility of this is Norfolk and Southern. And now the Congress needs to also, well, in Buttigieg, but transportation. But they need to determine what type of safety break do you need?
Yeah.
You know, go back to when they started to hollow these safety features out. What do you need? So that'll be the job of the lawmakers. I would assume somebody better get on it right away.
Yeah, I'm still
but
waiting.
The absolute responsibility to me of this catastrophe is going to be Norfolk and Southern. Oh, by the way, there was one other thing. These chemicals, as I understand it, were not labeled hazardous.
Yeah, the railroad has a weird kind of setup. I spend a lot of time going into rail yards. You know, because my job is to shuttle, you know, trailers back and forth from our terminal to the rail yards. And, you know, I've taken hazmat into rail yards that it has to be placarded on the road. And then they make me take the placards off once it goes into the rail yard. I've had that happen on a number of occasions because they have very different kind of labeling requirements. And then sometimes I've been able to drive them on the road without placards that they want placard on. It's really, there doesn't seem to be any consistency between rail and the road where you would think there might be something. It seems odd to me, but they've got some weird kind of requirements that I don't understand.
Well, they're also tough to deal with, too.
Oh, God, are they?
Horrible. That goes back to when I was safety director of the city of Bel Air. They sprayed all the cars with paint, and then it took almost an act of the Lord to get them to pay for it.
No, I know all about how difficult they can be. And this is the problem with having these companies that are so big, so powerful, with such outweighted resources to be able to lobby and demand whatever they want, and to be able to hold the country hostage in the event that they don't get what they want.
Correct. Yeah. And like I said, they're one of the worst to deal with.
And, you know, the weird thing is, you know, you can go back through the history of this country. You know, rail barons have always been the worst of the worst. You know, you go back to the old Jay Gould. Well, he was credited with saying, I could easily pay half the working class to murder the other half. Are you surprised that we still have that kind of mentality here?
True. That's true.
I mean, it's wow.
It does go back.
But I'm good to hear that you and your family safe, everybody well. But you know, I said from the beginning, where are the rail companies bringing in bottled water? There should be train loads of it coming in.
And there's just so much fear and you know, anger, but a lot of fear by people, just not enough was done. And like I said, my family's fine. We think, like all the rest, we don't know. Yeah. No, my daughter and I talked about it today, and my son, you know. They're just going to continue to take the precautions because we really just don't know.
Now, Trump supposedly is coming to your neck of the woods on Wednesday. Any idea why Trump would come to this at this moment? And is it, I mean, he's going to bring paper towels? I don't know.
J.D. Vance got into the thing with Buttigieg, you know, and of course Manchin. And so I think Trump's just coming because, you know, he sees an issue.
Yeah. See, I get that. I get J.D. Vance, and I get your governor, and I get people from Ohio and people from Pennsylvania and West Virginia, you know, going, hey, you know, what are you doing, Pete? Because they actually have the means to hold him accountable. Trump just looking for attention, I think. And I would argue going to make the situation worse by clogging up, you know, scarce resources and the ability to move around because, you know, he just doesn't come by himself. He's not coming into town on a bicycle or a horse.
Right, and he also hasn't went to other sites where there has been some type of disaster. I think this is probably J.D. Vance asking him to come in there, I would honestly assume.
Yeah, well, we'll see. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. I wanted to get your thoughts on the balloon. Balloon gate.
Oh, if I hear the word balloon one more time. Oh, did you see the poor group? I think they're in Illinois. I could be wrong. And they put up these balloons. It's some little balloon group, right? Some older guys that do these little balloons to see things or whatever. And I guess they said, well, we had a balloon up there, and all of a sudden it stopped transmitting. So I think we're just shooting anything down now at the potential. And now there's balloon detente, where our Secretary of State is going to meet in Munich with his counterpart from China, and they're going to kind of use the Munich setting to get past the balloon. So, it's balloon fever.
Oh, God.
It came into the country. We shot it down. But now it seems, like I said, that we're shooting everything under the sun.
And, you know, I look at this, and again, I go back to what I said from the beginning. It shows that we're just not, we're not the people that we were 40 years ago. We seem to be very skittish.
You made a point on your show the other day. It's a balloon. It was from China. It was shot down. But how does this whole thing grip so many people in the nation? We shot it down. Okay. Yell at China. Send a balloon over to them. I don't know. Do something. Yell. But, you know, it's done. We weren't invaded with, you know, incoming missiles.
No, but if you listen to the F channel and you listen to right-wing media, and I guess the defense I will make for today's generation is, you know, there was no F channel when I was a kid. There was no, you know, blathering right-wing hate machine, you know, trying to get us all outraged every minute of every day. So, you know, maybe who knows what would have happened back then. But and also we had elected leaders who weren't hair on fire. Right now we've got elected leaders who are, you know, every day tweeting out these insane things that they have to know isn't, that they have to know aren't true. But it's still, I got to get the attention. Need to get on the F channel. Need to get on the podcast circuit. Need to get my name out there, Bob. I got to make my star.
Well, like I said today, a lot of the things going on in Congress are entertainment. Some of the things going on in the corporate media are entertainment. And that's what it boils down to, entertainment. Yeah. And it's, in a lot of cases, sick entertainment.
Now, look, you know, when you were in Congress, I didn't always agree with you, but I respected you. And I respected, you know, I didn't always agree with other people, but I respected them. You were doing a job. Now, look, crazy. And I don't know how we go back to this. Maybe, you know, there's part of me that hopes this whole trial by the voting systems companies with the F channel there, that maybe we start breaking some of this stuff up and people start paying attention. Because you've been following what's coming out of this trial?
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, you know, the things that they were saying behind the scenes while you know, emailing each other and behind the scenes saying, you know, they don't believe any of this stuff and we should, you know, fire reporters for questioning the president. And then, you know, the base believing every word that they blather out on air is just, I got to wonder, will the viewers eventually go, we were lied to?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, everything's so turned upside down. Steny Hoyer, the number two Democrat in the House, he gave his exit speech, not from office, but from the leadership position. And his exit speech was The Psychology of Consensus. And if you Google it, Steny Hoyer, The Psychology of Consensus, it's a very interesting speech. Now, not just because my name's in it, okay? But the fact of the points he makes, which goes right back to what you were saying about when I was there and whether you agreed or not. If you look at his points, because people say, oh, Bob, you're old and you're just thinking, you know, that it was different and it wasn't different. Yes, it was different. Sure, some things happened. But this whole psychosis, paranoia, you know, the conspiracy theorists were just considered some like wackos just in the corner of some states here and there.
Yep.
And now they dominate people's theories. I have friends of mine, Rick, that have literally lost their minds, that have bought into things where I say, you've got to be kidding me. Not things that aren't ever believable.
I saw, you know, someone sent me a funny response and they said that, yeah, QAnon is Scientology for hillbillies. And I go, yeah, I got to be honest, there's some truth in that.
People follow the QAnon. Like I said, they come up with theories. I've had people send me messages saying, this is what happens. That's what happens. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. I mean, I personally had people come to me and say, well, this is what people in Congress do. And I'm like, not on this planet. They don't.
Yeah,
I mean, they don't drink children's blood. I mean, that's actually out there, but some people believe that.
Oh, I know. I know. You should see the stuff I get. I'm sure you've gotten much, much worse over the years. But again, it comes back down to, we don't talk to each other anymore. We find our little silos and then we throw bombs at each other. And if I hear the words, do your own research one more time, I am going to scream, because it's usually said by someone who has no idea what doing research actually is. I'm sorry, watching YouTube videos with your pants around your ankles on the can is not doing research.
You know, I've been asked the question, when will this change, or how will this change, more importantly? I'm not sure it changes from the ground up, this case. People in leadership in both parties that have any kind of common sense brain know this all is going the wrong direction.
Yeah.
If they could step up to the plate and say, well, wait a minute, you know, and go back to the way, you know, it used to be, that would help.
Yeah, Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan getting drunk together.
Also, people would help.
Yeah, because you guys used to get to, you know, get together, family picnic stuff, right? Isn't that how it used to be? I mean, the famous stories of Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan getting drunk together. You know, wasn't that part of it?
Sure. Yeah, it was. And I mean, I'm not going to give this person up because they're currently in Congress and they're very well known. But when I got in trouble, my phone rang. I remember exactly where I was. I was up in Columbus, Ohio, and I was with my kids, and the phone rang, and a member of Congress, a Democrat, this wasn't the only call I had, they said, "Are you okay? How's your children?" They knew Bob, you know, Bobby and Kayla was their name. "And is there anything I can do? Anything? You need help. You need money. You need to," and that's from a, if I said the person's name, everybody would be like, "What?" That's the way it was.
Yeah.
It's just the way it was.
Maybe there's a way back. And look, I keep thinking that the way forward is doing away with a lot of this really insane stuff that calls themselves media, holding them more accountable. And maybe this lawsuit by Dominion and the other one are going to, maybe this that could be the beginning. I don't know.
I think it was a good lawsuit because it was outrageous.
Yep. And the discovery that's coming out of it is outrageous.
Sure.
And again, it's one of those. It's one of those things where, you know, believe what's said in the courtroom. Don't believe what they're blathering on in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. I think the lawsuit's healthy, and maybe it'll, you know, put some fear into people that they just can't go about doing what they want to do. That's why I think the Georgia grand jury is so important.
Yep.
It's important. They've already said they think people purge themselves. That's important, where people actually, you know, as a collusive group, tried to undo an election of a president.
Scary, scary times. But Bob, I appreciate the time as always. I hope everyone is safe and stays in good shape there. I hope this gets cleaned up and we move forward and people are held accountable. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Man, I can't imagine. I'll tell you, I can't imagine what it would be like to be in that situation. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to The Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at TheRickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@ricksmithshow.com. So The Guardian had a really interesting story. Evidently, according to The Guardian's most recent reporting, Taliban fighters have stopped the sale of contraceptives in two of Afghanistan's main cities, claiming their use by women is a Western conspiracy to control the Muslim population. They write, The Guardian has learned that the Taliban has been going door to door, threatening midwives and ordering pharmacies to clear their shelves of all birth control medicines and devices. I read this and my mind immediately went to, you change two words in that sentence. Change the word Taliban and change the word Afghanistan, and you got, well, what's going on right here? Well, I guess three. You take out Muslim. Christian extremists are stopping the sale of contraceptives. It's what's going to happen over the summer. Get ready for the Christian warriors, freedom fighters, if you will, to be picketing out in front of your local CVS and your Walgreens and your stores, because you've got a former vice president who's running for president saying, we're going to ban those abortion pills. There is a movement right now. There's organizing happening. I'm telling you, it's happening. They are putting together their plot to get out there and to force these pharmacies to no longer sell any of this stuff. And look, you know, the power that they wield and the commitment to harass and intimidate, I fear what happens for women in this country. And again, you know, you're going to find states that are attempting right now to stop the the male purchase of contraception. Right now it's the abortion pill, but you know where this is going. They never stop. So to me, I saw that report and I'm going, wow, that's frightening. But I could see it happening. I could see it happening right here. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, make sure you download the podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts. From Stitcher to Podbean and everywhere in between, you will find our podcast. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Something I said got under your skin, made you think. Definitely want to hear it. If you're in East Palestine, let me know. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to the Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.